morning, everybody. I think it's time to get started. Thank you so much for coming today. For you that don't know me, my name is Ann Moore, and I'm the interim CEO of Sacramento Steps Forward. And I'm happy to be here today with Cindy Kavanaugh from the County Homeless Programs and Emily Halcon. I want to say Hoddle. Excuse me, Emily. I've known her for a while from the Sacramento City Homeless Program. And I think you're all here because you're very aware that there are some very significant dollars that are being made available to communities across the state to focus on addressing homeless programs, and it's a very fast process, but there's also a commitment for it to be a collaborative process. So that's why we're really happy that you're joining us today to talk about what we see as opportunities and get your comments on what you see makes sense for Sacramento. And before we get started, it's always really helpful to know who's in the room. So if we could go around very quickly, we certainly want to save as much time to talk and to hear your thoughts. But if just your name and who you're representing, I think that would be really helpful. And if we could start right here.
That'd be great.
I'm Chris Martin from Howard Housing.
Ian from Watch Tips.
I'm Kimmy from Wind U Services.
I'm Ann, I'm a case manager at Sacramento Regional Conservation Corps.
Frank Toppin, Sacramento County Mental Health Services Act Steering Committee.
I'm Richard Barton, and I'm with the Sacramento LGBTQ Community Center.
I'm April Wick, I'm the new Executive Director of Resources for Independent Living.
And I'm Maria Ramirez from Resources for Independent Living.
With the
city of Sacramento.
Angela Lynn, the city of Sacramento, and
Monica
Roca Wyatt, County Behavioral Health. Sherry Green with County Mental Health.
Dorothy Landsberg with George School of Law.
Lisa
Mickelberg with George School of Law.
Teresa Ogan,
California Health Collaborative.
Sarah with Lotto Legal Services in Northern California.
Jane Smith, Sacramento Veterans Resource Center.
Deborah
Larson,
Sacramento Adult Protective Services.
Brian Pine, also Sacramento APS.
Noel Kellerman, Loves Efficiency.
Christine Wall from Sacramento Native American Health Center.
Monty Tavares, Volunteers of America.
Tom Bland, Sacramento Sheriff's Home and Outreach Team.
Megan Marshall, Sacramento County Department of Human Assistance.
Colette Johnson, Cherokee County Mental Health Board.
Julie Davis-Jaffe, Sacramento Employment Training Agency.
Eduardo Manero, Sacramento County Department of Human Assistance.
My name is Nikki, and I'm with the Sacramento Youth Council, which is also the Youth Advisory Board for the Continuum of Care here in the county and the city. And these are some young folks this room is a little big for this mic at this moment. But this is Dakota, who is the Youth Subcommittee for the COC co-chair. Along with Bridget and Susie, EDs, and this is Dominic, a member of our Youth Advisory Board.
Stephanie Kamen, Volunteers of America.
Jenkins, Wall Space Health.
Nick Morris, Sacramento County Public Health.
My name is Nicolette Romig. I'm with the EFM, a Transitional Housing Program, and I'm also with Water Sanctuary. Cynthia Pimentel with Next Booth.
Stephen Heisler, City of Rancho Cordova.
I'm Jaski, Sacramento Area Congregations Together.
Julie Field, Department of Human Assistance.
Susan Beasley, Sacramento Housing and Development Agency.
Kim Church, first of all, private tax-paying citizen. Also, I founded SAC Safe Space for Unhomed Youth and started an alliance to address the shelter crisis. So, thanks.
And Ross with Sacramento Legal Coalition and Homelessness and Sacramento Housing Alliance.
Steve Waters with First Step Communities.
Bob Rollin Bush, Sacramento Regional Coalition for Homelessness.
Brian Talcott, Women's Empowerment.
Kathy Kressel, Sacramento.
John Foley, Sacramento Self Help Housing.
Liz Madison, Wind U Services.
Kate Hutchinson, Lutheran Social Services.
Bridget Alexander, Wage in the Village.
Sandy Pankowski, Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment Agency.
And Ben Avey, Sacramento Steps Forward.
Kate Casarino, Sacramento Steps Forward.
Michelle Watt, Sacramento Steps Forward.
Sacramento Steps Forward.
Michael Mott, Sacramento News Radio.
Great. Well, once again, thank you for all for being here. Before we get started, I'd like to just give you an agenda so you can see what we hope to accomplish today. With that introduction, Cindy and Emily are going to be standing by to talk about sort of what the overview of the funding opportunities are, what the local objectives and priorities that we've identified that we think should frame what goes forward from this community. We certainly are going to be looking for your comments on that. We want to talk to you a little bit about what we think are elements of a proposal that fits the funding opportunity, and we think we'll work in this community once again. That's something we want to talk a lot more with you about and get your comments on. We'll frame the timeline and what we see as the next steps, and then hopefully we save plenty of time to really hear from you and get your comments and reactions to what we're thinking, and also what are we missing, what do you think should be happening. We will be capturing all of this information, making sure it's recorded, and it will be included in the process that goes forward. So with that, I'd like to turn over to Emily, and we'll continue the conversation.
Thank you. And as Ann said, my name is Emily Halpin. I am the Homeless Services Coordinator of the City of Sacramento. And so as you can see, it's a very collaborative process. But I did want to underscore what Ann said at the beginning. It's also been a very quick process. You know, one of the exciting things about this legislation is it allows us access to a significant amount of funds but in a relatively short time, which is both a blessing and a curse. It's great because we have a crisis. We need money as soon as possible, but it's very difficult to pull together some complex program structures in a really short period of time. So we're here to share with you where we're at today, hear from you. I'm going to give a really big picture overview, and this is very complex, but if you looked at the legislation, it'd be a lot less complex about what funding we're actually talking about. So in July, I guess it was, the governor signed into law Senate Bill 850, which included amongst its provisions the creation of two new programs, which we are affectionately calling HEAP and KESH, based on the acronyms. There is other things in the bill, but today what we're going to talk about is these two funding structures. Let's first talk about the HEAP program, which stands for Homeless Emergency Aid Program, right? Assistance Program. And it actually comes in three different components, so just to make it a little more complex. This is a block grant, so a one-time block grant of funding from the state to communities specifically to address the emergency crisis of unsheltered homelessness in the communities. And it's also very specifically loose and intentionally doesn't come with a lot of parameters about use, because they really wanted local communities to drive the development of programs that meet the needs in that community. The HEAP funding, as I said, is there's three sort of subsections about how the amounts are calculated, and it really is based on the size of your community, the number of folks experiencing homelessness in your community, and the relative size of those populations to the other communities in our state. And so there's a big complex formula. Well, it's not that big or complex, but there's a formula that gets to where we are. But basically, our two pots of money combined, the amount that we are eligible for in round one, will be about $17 million. It's one-time funding. There is a possibility, if not all the money is subscribed in round one, that we could go back in round two, but we are essentially guaranteed, if we can meet these conditions, to get access at least $17 million. And I want to talk about the two different ways the money is going to flow. The first column on the far left is about $12.7 million, which will go through the continuum of care. In our community, that is Sacramento Steps Forward. The second pot of money is going to go directly to the city of Sacramento. What we call the big 11 cities, the 11 cities in the state with the largest populations, get an additional allocation directly to city governments. Today we're primarily going to be talking about the COC funding, but I will tell you where the city of Sacramento is at in our planning for our dollars as well. The amount going to the COC is about 12.7, and the amount going to the city is about 5.6. Both of the pots come with some pretty important requirements. The most important is that to access and administer these funds, the jurisdictions which are drawing down these funds, so in our case, the city of Sacramento for the $5.6 million, and the county of Sacramento for the 12.7, and if any of the other cities want to administratively participate, those cities must declare a shelter crisis. And that is a legislative thing which requires the cities or counties to indicate the crisis of unsheltered homelessness in their community. Both the city of Sacramento and the county of Sacramento are working with our legal teams right now on those resolutions, and we'll talk a bit more about timing of that. It won't really affect any of the work that we are doing, because what a shelter crisis does is on a very, very limited basis allows you to open public facilities that are not designed to be shelters as shelters, which is a great thing. We'll get to the programs in a minute. So we are working through that process. You will be hearing a lot more about that process. The other requirement in both of these pots is that the minimum 5% must be used to serve homeless youth programs. And then the final thing is that no more than 5% can be used for administrative purposes. The second pot, which is on the far left and we're calling KESH, is a smaller portion of money, and this is sort of the first rollout of some of the SB2 dollars. We are eligible for up to $1.6 million. That will also flow through the continuum of care in this case. For purposes of today's discussion, we're gonna talk about this holistically, because these really have the same goals, the same objectives, and we think it's best to sort of talk about the whole picture of the funds. On the city side, the city-specific side, the $5.6 million, it is anticipated that the city will be using that money to expand and augment and add to the shelter capacity, as we have been doing over the past year through our triage shelter. So as we were thinking about these two pots of money, the 12.7 and the 1.6, the three of us collectively first started thinking, what are our objectives here, and what are the objectives that are laid out in the legislation? First, it's very clear from the legislation is that this money is intended to address the immediate need of unsheltered homelessness. There's actually an FAQ from the state that underscores that even more. This is not intended to build new housing or do long-term housing projects, which are great and really needed, but this money is intended to be on the street quickly and be spent quickly. And so that really points to emergency crisis interventions. Secondly, we have to implement this really, really quickly. You're gonna, I don't think we put the timeline up here, but we could draw down these funds as early as this fall. They have to be fully expended by June of 2021. So this is something, and you have to be half expended a year before that. So this has to be something that we can stand up and implement quickly. So because of that, we think it's very important that we try to, as much as possible, rely on existing administrative infrastructure. We think that trying to stand up a complete new infrastructure could really eat into our time, and we want to rely as much as possible on some existing systems. But at the same time, I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting myself, we want to drive broad system change with money that we have to spend really quickly. And that's a challenge. You know, we understand this is one-time money. We understand that this is a block grant infusion. But we see it as an opportunity to model some things and to do some new programming and to drive long-term system change. Because that's something I'm really excited about, the opportunity that while this money might disappear after 2 years, the impact on the system, on the broader system, hopefully will live on. And then finally, we believe, as we do with most of the stuff, everything that we do here, that we really want to measure and evaluate our outcomes. We want to be very transparent. We want to see the markers of change, and we want to be able to share that very broadly with the community. So I want to say that Cindy is going to now dive deep into our specific proposal for funds.
Sure. Thank you, Emily. And thank you, everyone, for coming. This is an exciting opportunity. We have a great community and collaboration going on, so we are excited with the challenge of spending money. So I'm going to walk through as best I can and explain where we are, with where we think the biggest impact is. And our goals, we think the focus is on using these one-time funds to actually increase services and spur system change for adult populations, including transition age youth. We may have that not quite right. Well, all of this may not be quite right, and we'll get your comments. But you can see the basic thrust is here is that we have done things within our family system, and we have fairly robust services within CalWORKs. We think we have not done those same things in our crisis response system on the non-family households. So we would like to improve the access and increase the capacity in the shelter system for singles. We'd like to really focus and improve the housing outcomes, provide specific assistance for people, not only in a sheltered situation, but in unsheltered, because in fact, most of our adult population is unsheltered. And at the same time, we think there's the opportunity, and we're gonna say more about this, about as we do this, to really start to weave our system together a little bit more than it's weaved together, really function more in a more coordinated fashion. And that includes connecting with other systems of care, which include adult protective services, which include mental health, which include the criminal justice system. So this is our best depiction of what we're talking about. At its core is a flexible housing program or fund. It would include a really focused attention on how we rehouse individuals, what kind of assistance they need, how we cultivate landlords and incentivize landlords or put together shared housing, how we get folks in housing as quickly as possible. We can build shelter, and if we're not moving folks through, and the city is proposing that, we have a very stagnant system. And we can increase the capacity of our shelter if we actually provide resources connected to the shelters, and I'm going to talk also about those unsheltered. If we actually connect people in a very concrete, focused way to rehousing assistance. So at its core is this program or fund or provider that will be really focused on rehousing folks. Not on providing shelter here, not on everything else you can do, really laser focused on rehousing. In existing housing, that's what we have to work with. We know there are challenges and we want to hear about that from you. But we also want to do, for the first time, we think, within this sort of silo and middle silo, some diversion. So that means as people are approaching homelessness, want to get into a shelter, but maybe in a situation that can be stabilized, to offer some financial assistance to help people stay where they are. And often that's with a family member that it's just not working, but with a little mitigation or a little funding, it could work out. This community needs to learn this skill. We're practicing it a bit in the family system. So we think it makes sense here as well. The two on each side representing sheltered and unsheltered populations, we think what we'd like to do is connect these two, I'm gonna start with the shelters, and at the same time drive some change within our shelters. We should mention that we've been working on this issue prior to this funding. It isn't something we're making up as a need, and it's not hard to make up needs, of course, but this is something we've are working on now and want to do. We'd like to work on our single shelter side, recognizing that we don't have great flow through the shelters. Access is unclear, probably not prioritized, certainly not coordinated. So there's things we think we can do to improve access, transparency, and rehousing from the shelters, which will increase capacity there. So listed under there, in case you can't see it, is low and no barrier entry, performance-based contracts, and coordinated entry. On the other side, recognizing again that much of this population is not sheltered, we have a number of navigation programs that are not highly coordinated, not practicing consistently, and sometimes just have to scrape together ways for people to connect to housing. In fact, that's maybe one of the most successful things they do is without any resource, you know, connect people to families or, again, connect them to some housing. We think with some help, these navigation programs and other programs that offer case management of some form to an unsheltered population could tap into this rehousing resource. We have identified some. You know the Pathways Program, which is the whole person care program that the city operates, doesn't have funding for rehousing. So that is an example, a perfect example of a program that's doing coordination, engaging folks, but needs a resource to rehouse them. We've also listed programs like Adult Protective Services, who work with the most vulnerable, folks that have been that are in jeopardy in some way, and we think connecting some case management services and rehousing services to that population. I'm going to list the others. Just recognize that this list will be phased. We will be doing more work to figuring out who this is that taps in. Again, we want some consistency, so we're going to incentivize some consistency to be able to utilize this program. But also listed here is the Wind Youth Service Center, the North A Street program, which is a new day rehousing program that is a collaboration of the city and county. A new jail diversion program. Joining us at some point when she had a conflict will be someone from the public defender's office. And when she comes, I'm going to have her say a few things about this. It's really a pilot. It is recognizing that the populations we're talking about cycle in and out of institutional care, whether it's jail, mental health, hospitals, or our streets, and we think this is a place to really intercept in an effective way and offer services that can break that cycle. And Tiffany will tell us a little bit more about the ideas we have there. Outreach navigators, including really HA social workers, people working on the street with folks, trying to connect them to resources, and this will be a resource that will be available. So these colors still don't work.
Still don't work. On paper, they look better.
But we've listed some of the services and work we think there is to do under both the system work we talked about and the increased service delivery. So we have definitely work on coordinated entry, not only for the shelters, but more broadly. For a coordinated entry system, which is really under the purview of Sacramento Steps Forward. The single shelter redesign is a system work, working on navigation standards, and the housing location approach. We know folks in this room and others are really figuring out what's needed to rehouse people in existing housing. We want to deepen that work, deepen the collaboration, and that, frankly, is what we have to focus on to just address the issue and help people. On the service delivery side, again, mentioned the shelter services, the rehousing services, and the jail diversion as sort of some of the key parts of the shelter, of the increased services. Oh, is this, I
think this is me now. So thanks. Let me go through the timeline, and I think we're pretty close to opening this up for more comment. I'm happy to say I think we've saved some time, so we can
you hear me?
Is that right? So we can really give you a chance to talk. So the timeline, by Monday, we are doing everything we can to record this meeting and other collaboration discussions that we've had. We will get the PowerPoint that we're presenting out to you by email if you signed up so that you can have that for your records and for further thought. We have notepad, there are note paper that you can write written comments on if you want to get them into the system. If you want to email us, we'll receive your comments through the end of business day on the 27th of August, and we will record what comes out of this meeting, whatever other comments you send, and make sure that they're available online, that they're thought about in the process as we move forward. September 5th, we anticipate that the HEAP NOPA will be formally released. We're doing a lot of this work based on pre-information that we're receiving from the state of California. We think we pretty much know what the picture is, but that's when it actually occurs. On September 12th, we plan to come back to the COC Advisory Board with a more fully formed recommendation based on what we've talked to you today and whatever other comments and thoughts we receive from this group and other groups that we're speaking with. On September 25th, we plan to go both to the City Council and the Board of Supervisors on that same day with a proposal to move forward. And that will include the resolutions, the shelter emergency resolutions that Emily spoke about. And if I would go back at the COC meeting on the 12th, we'll be asking for the COC's recommendation and also identification of Sacramento Steps Forward as the applicant entity. We hope to very quickly submit proposals for both HEAP and KESH, maybe as soon as the day after we go to Board and Council. We don't know, but as quickly as we can, the sooner that those applications go in, the sooner the money will actually be available in this community. I think the release of funds is committed to be very, very quick. And then we need to get started. And I do need to say the application is going to be kind of broad. The state isn't asking for huge amounts of specificity. So there's going to be lots of work that continues to get this up and running to make things happen. So this is absolutely not the last conversation, but plenty of conversation as we move forward and become operational. So with that, I think we're ready.
Tiffany's here, so.
Oh, great.
Check her back.
I'm going to ask Tiffany to come up and just give a brief overview of that jail diversion program pilot. Tiffany's with our public defender's office, and she will tell you a little bit about what she's already been working on with this population. We're asking you to use the microphone. How do you say this? Sinnott. Tiffany Sinnott.
Hi. We are so excited to be here and to be part of this and start looking at partnering with the community. So what we are looking at developing is a homeless diversion program. And the reason why is that the Public Defender's Office has seen an increased number of cases coming through with homeless population. And traditionally in the court setting, everybody's looking at sanctions. The focus is on the charge and not necessarily the client. And what we're finding is that's not necessarily helping anyone. Whether it's a guilty verdict, not guilty verdict, or plea, at the end of the day, the client still has the issues that nobody has really touched on. So we started reaching out to different agencies, and we reached out to the Department of Human Assistance, and we started working with them on the Flexible Rehousing Support Program and the Meet Their VA program. And how we started that process was we found out that they have a lot of clients that they wanted to get into those programs, but the problem was clients had warrants. And they can't get them connected with services when they have warrants. So we started partnering up with them to go in, and they say, hey, Tiffany, we have a client. Great, who's the client? Let me get the case, let me get the warrant, let me go to court, let me recall the warrant.
Let me bring that case on calendar, and then let me let the court and the DA know what's going on with this client. Let the focus now be, hey, judge, we have this client who has this great opportunity to work at Mather and do really well in the program. Let's see what we can do with that. And the court was really responsive, and the DA was really responsive. And they were very excited to have some sort of other alternatives besides jail or penalty or going to another jury trial that cost the county $10,000 a day. And so we invest that money into the client, and we have found great success. So what our office is looking at doing is expanding that model, expanding it so that we can create some sort of homeless diversion program through the court system, and that we can connect clients to services, case management, housing, and we can keep the community safe, and we can stop the revolving door of clients being picked up, case dealt with, back on the street, picked up again. We have to stop that cycle. So that's the idea behind the homeless diversion program. We're very excited. We've already seen a difference in working with Mather and the FRSP program, and we're hoping to build upon that.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much. Great. So hopefully that's an overview of what we're thinking about, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about the process we were thinking of as far as receiving your comments, and we'll sort of see how it goes. I'm going to bring the materials up here. We're prepared to scribe, to capture all your comments, and we were thinking of bundling them together in two bunches. The first would be just reactions to what we've presented to you so far. Are there additional, we talked about our objectives. Maybe before we finish, we can flash back on what those are, but let me go through the questions. Are there objectives that we missed when we were thinking of formulating our proposal? Are there specific subpopulations that we should be targeting? We talked about what our thoughts were on that. Are there important design considerations, like how long assistance, what kind of landlord incentives? Any comments from based on what you heard that you want to make sure we think about? Other thoughts? And then let's go back to the next, just so you can think about where you want to engage. We also want to know what your new suggestions might be. Do you have other thoughts about how other things that should be funded? And if you could describe that new thought, we'd like you to think about them in terms of these objectives, which we think are pretty compelling. Does this address an immediate need? Are you able to implement it quickly? Can we work with existing infrastructure? Because we need to put this together very quickly, get it up and running. Will it help us get to broader social change? And are we able to measure and evaluate outcomes? So let's step back and just, what do you think about what we've heard? Is there something that we need to take into account? Do you have any comments or critiques that you might want to offer?
And we do ask you to use the microphone so everybody can hear you. And if you're not comfortable speaking, we do have the comment cards you can drop off in the back at the end.
Thank you. I do have a question I'm always concerned about, admin. And of course, we are talking about a lot of money. We are talking about a large amount of problems. Keeping the admin in particular down to 5% and as low as possible. What just struck me was in the court diversion program, talking about billing. Since there is such a tremendous amount of money that is likely to be saved from this diversion, I'm wondering if there is some way to avoid in the billing process of billing the high expensive attorneys, etc., to this funding and going ahead and accruing it towards the large amount of money that's going to be saved instead.
So two good points in there, I think. In terms of the use of the funds, none of them are going to county attorneys or anything like that. They're going to the services needed by the client. So that's important. Although there is, you know, this 5% administration to administer those services.
Yep.
And then we think this is a pilot that can demonstrate whether it can work or not for the larger system. And if you want to add to that.
Right. So we already have, those cases are already there, right? We're already dealing with them on a daily basis. This just gives us alternatives and working with clients in the judicial system. So it's really touching the homeless population and helping connect them with the services. But we already have the attorneys, we already have the judges already at the courthouse dealing with these cases.
Thanks.
Another question?
Yeah, Bob Rowe, the Sacramento Homeless Coalition. I appreciate the thinking that went into the proposal, but quite frankly, I think it totally misses the point of the legislation. Thank you. I mean, what we should be thinking about is that we're going to be declaring a shelter emergency. We have 2,000, 2,500 people outside through no fault of their own that are homeless because we don't have enough shelter beds. We should be targeting emergency shelter. We're declaring a crisis. That's where this money should go. And we should really target who is underserved by the shelter system currently. It's women, seniors, and youth. That's where, if our first objective is to address immediate needs, the most immediate need is to stop people from dying. We're going to be releasing our 2018 homeless deaths report. I can tell you in about 2 weeks, but I can tell you the number of homeless deaths in 2017 was significantly higher than 2016 and the years before. We lose now, unfortunately and sadly, one homeless person every 6 days dies at an average age for men of about 50 years old and for homeless women, 45 years old. 45, I'm sorry, Emily, but this just misses the whole point. Let's save lives, let's bring people inside. Then you can do all the other things that you want to do, but not with this money. The county is heavily resourced. Why should we put money into a jail diversion program when the Board of Supervisors could allocate money for that? Why should we put money into the Whole Person Care Act when they're heavily resourced? We need to put money where we need it the most, and that's saving lives with a focus on women, children, seniors, and youth.
So it's a couple of things, thank you. I think we spent two things. We spent almost the entire presentation talking about two-thirds of the dollars, which is the 12.7. We didn't talk a lot about the other third, which is the 5.6 that the city will be receiving directly, and it is the intention that will go to create new shelter beds. So I know I said it different, I just want to underscore that. The second thing I want to say is, I mean, yes, you were right, we don't have enough shelter beds. And so we believe that by creating incentives to both lower barriers and more resources to move people out, we will have attrition quicker. This is an important component of our system to make sure, I believe it's an important component of our system to make sure that we move people through shelters quicker. And at the same time, add shelter beds. And I believe we're doing both of those things here. I don't want to speak for Tiffany, but I did want to say on the Whole Person Care, none of this money is going to Whole Person Care. This is, and so all of the Whole Person Care clients or Pathways clients, all of their services will remain paid for through Pathways. This is simply allowing them and anybody else who might be in need amongst these access to some housing subsidies. Pathways is ineligible to pay housing subsidies.
Picking up on Bob's complaint, have you investigated the extent to which existing shelter capacity could be cheaply expanded? 10%, 20%, just within the facilities that exist.
We are looking at even within the larger proposal of expanding within existing. It would not be quick, it will not be quick to expand to new facilities. So yes, we are looking at the ability to pay for shelter. It's not cheap. I mean, we figure a year-round shelter of 200 people will take most of the city money for 1 year. So it's never cheap, but yes, we are looking at, within the existing facility, can we expand and can this money?
Dorothy Lansford from the George. I have two specifics in response to your first two points. The first is additional objectives that we should consider. I think the evidence is clear that there are unmet civil legal needs that are not being met by the existing programs. Expungement, entering the disability programs, modification of child support orders, fines and fees. And I think that unless those are delivered and as part of the health and housing system, that they end up not being effective. And we've been involved a little bit in that space. We're actually working with the county on their DBAC program for disabilities. But I think that I would like to urge that an additional objective should be that we think about direct services to deal with these unmet civil legal barriers, which prevent people from moving into housing and employment and getting a steady income. All of those are directly the specific subpopulation I think we should consider are reentry people that are coming out of both jail and out of RCCC. The grand jury report from the county reports that there are over 130 people coming out every single day. Now, some of those people are homeless people that have intoxication or other problems and are basically recycling. But some of those people have been in the jail or RCCC for a while. There's no pre-release program planning that's coordinated in this county. We have a few people who work out of RCCC who are well-spaced health. We don't really have anybody who's working in the jail. Approximately 50 people come out of the jail between 10 o'clock at night and 5 a.m. in the morning, and that's all documented in your grand jury report. And there's a major report about reentry health, which has been put out by David Panish from a foundation that focuses very closely on the systemic changes that you could begin to make to deal with that population. Let me give you one very concrete example. They do not walk out with an ID card. If you come out of a state prison and you meet certain qualifications, you walk out with a Cal ID card. That would make a major difference for people who are returning to the street. So those would be my two concrete suggestions.
If I could respond to both of them. So I think you're absolutely right. The expungement clinic is something that our county really doesn't have in place. We had a community meeting yesterday, our office did, with our chief, Steve Garrett, and he is looking right now into developing an expungement clinic program.
And so is the county. Some of the county people are so, right there in that same place. Excuse me if I interrupt you. Sometimes we don't know what we're doing, and I just happen to know because we've done a training for them. The Department of Health Assistance is right there too.
Perfect. So it looks like it's a perfect opportunity for us to collaborate together. But that is an issue, and it's an issue that our office is looking at right now as well. And regarding the reentry jail and RCCC, you're right. Not only do they not get their ID, but they also don't have their belongings half the time. It's something that Cindy Kavanaugh and I've been talking about with this homeless diversion program. Why is it that clients are released, and if they're released from SAC PD, they have to walk a mile and a half to go get their belongings that were booked? Or, God forbid, there was Sacramento Sheriff's Department and they have to figure out how they're going to get 15 miles to Rancho Cordova to get their personal belongings out of booking. That means clients are released without wallets, without cell phones. We realize that's an issue. That's something we're hoping to be able to address through this program.
I would like to add the objective, or maybe I'm missing something. I'm not clear of the population that we're talking about.
It's hard to hear you.
Really, even with
yes.
This? Nobody ever says that to me before. Most people go, shh. Okay, so is this better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the population we're talking about serving are the people who we believe are disabled and are never going to work again, and all we have to focus all of our efforts on. Disability and permanent housing subsidy. So if that's what we're talking about, then ignore this comment. If that's not what we're talking about, there are 65% of the people who are in a shelter who are making under $250 a month. 40% of the people make zero. So if we make the assumption that all of those people are going to become eligible for disability, then fine. But if we make the assumption that some of those people actually are capable of working, then I think we need an employment piece in this. The fair market rental value for a one bedroom in Sacramento is $860 a month, which means that you have to earn, even at the 50% rent burden, which is really too high, you have to be bringing home $1,720. So if for people who don't want to share, and some people don't want to share, and for those people who don't want to go back to or don't have the opportunity to get back to their families, we need to have another option. And there are a considerable number of people who have that, if we're talking about the bigger population.
And that is one of our questions, is which population are we talking about? Should we be targeting? I didn't say sort of our thinking on this. We know permanent supportive housing is needed by folks, but there is not enough, and it takes money and time to build more. We also know rapid rehousing is, while it's trying to serve folks with, within that are on disability or won't have a lot of employment, it's really geared towards folks who will be employed. We were thinking this was in between. This was a program in between that could serve people, say, up to the length of this funding, if we have to expend it, in 3 years. It could serve them for 3 years, but it would not go on forever. We're hoping we can serve people in both categories, but I think we need help on how that looks and how we structure the rehousing assistance. And we expect deeper conversations and perhaps some focus groups on that.
Subsidized employment programs do really well with engaging employers to take people who have had long histories of unemployment or other significant barriers like criminal histories, mental health, etc. And we have some very robust services for people on CalWORKs, essentially families, but we don't have those types of services for singles. So as a specific objective, I would just like to add that. Could be short one time, and we could probably get a lot of people employed via the subsidies for 6 months, and then they're usually can retain.
Hello. Okay. I know my name is Kim Yama, and I did sales here with New Services. But personally speaking, I was homeless, and I would like if you guys could focus on single women with no children, with or without drug addictions, because a lot of programs that are out there, you have to have kids or you have to be on drugs to get into them. So it makes it difficult if somebody, say like me, was put into a homeless situation. It's like, oh, I need to go have a baby, or I need to go do this so I can get into this program. So I think that's basically what I wanted to say. And then also, elderly, disabled people who are homeless, that's another good, I guess, topic or category you guys should focus on. And also maybe even having like some type of caregiver to like recipient type of like something, to where like people can, because even when you do get in trouble and you are a caregiver, then you're put on like this tier two and you can't go through the registry system, through the in-home supportive system. So then you have to find your own person to care for, and that's really hard. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Foley, Sacramento Supportive Housing. I want to echo what you were just saying. When we talked about this at my staff meeting yesterday, the only thing people talked about was the need for a higher level of care. That folks who move into permanent supportive housing or people who are referred to permanent supportive housing often need significant level of support that is not currently available. And there's really no way to use HUD dollars to do that through the continuum. The Board of Care industry has collapsed, and we don't have that resource very often. A lot of our folks are not good candidates for that anyway. I know this is not permanent funding, so I'm not exactly sure how you would do that, but if you could do sort of a pilot project to kind of see if we could experiment with something, it would be very helpful. Thank you.
Allison Collier from Sacramento County Office of Education. As we have talked about this funding, a portion of this funding is specified for you, and yet at this time we do not have any youth-specific objectives. It's essential that we add that to our objectives in order to drive effective use of that portion of the funding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want a couple things. I know that this is a fast process, and I know people are, you know, it was mentioned at the beginning, people are out because there's a lot of money to be spent, but some people are out because there's an actual shelter crisis. Some people are out because we know people, we live with people, we love people who live outside. So I just want to remind everyone that the process matters when we're building programs, when we're developing programs. Process and time, taking time, even when we're in a rush, matters. It matters especially, particularly when we're attempting to enact broad system change. I'd like some more clarification about what your idea of broad system change is, because the legislation put forward is really powerful. I don't know if this community is very familiar with the legislation, but I encourage folks to look it up. The section code on shelter crisis itself, what enabled this city, you know, there's been advocates in this community for years attempting to get this city and this county to declare a shelter crisis because it's necessary, because it's powerful legislation, and they don't need to do just what they've always done, okay? They don't need to do just what they've always done. They can do a lot of different things. So I'm gonna take us back to the legislation. Public facility means any facility of a political division, including parks, schools, vacant or underutilized facilities, which are owned, operated, leased, or maintained, any combination thereof by the political subdivision. I'm going to read just a short part of it compared to the entirety, but none of it's been shared here, so I feel like it's really important. So that you guys understand the scope of what can be done versus the framing and the narrative that they've presented today. Combination thereof by the political subdivision, meaning the city or the county and their continuum of care. Declaration of a shelter crisis means the duly proclaimed existence of a situation in which a significant number of persons are without the ability to obtain shelter, resulting in a threat to their health and safety. Emergency bridge housing community means any new or existing facilities, including but not limited to housing and temporary structures, including but not limited to emergency sleeping cabins, community support facilities, showers and bathrooms, adequate to serve the anticipated number of residents, not one for $100,000 in a neighborhood full of people. To move to permanent housing as quickly as reasonably possible. So that is obviously an important goal. Upon the declaration of a shelter crisis, the following provision shall apply during the period of emergency. The political subdivision, the city or the county, shall be immune from liability for ordinary negligence in the provision of emergency housing. The limitation of liability shall apply to condition, acts, or omissions directly related to, which would not occur but for the provision of emergency housing. It means they lose liability. All this time they say zoning, they say liability about why we can't just open shelters, why we can't just let people have tents when that is the only shelter between them and the elements. But this releases them of that liability, so they don't need to say that anymore. The section does not limit the liability for grossly negligent, reckless, or intentional conduct which causes injury. So we're still protected. We can still protect our vulnerable populations. The provision of any state or local regulatory statute, regulation, or ordinance prescribing standards of housing, health, safety, shall be suspended to the extent that strict compliance would in any way prevent, hinder, or delay the mitigation of the effects of the shelter crisis, which means the anti-camping ordinance is one of those ordinances that they would have to. I'm very right at the end. Political subdivisions may, I'm talking about the actual shelter crisis. We talked about legal services for so long, and I'm happy to go there. I watched people get released out of the jail all night with no shoes, no jackets. That happened all night last night. So I'm there with you, but I'm at the shelter crisis right now. So in place of such political subdivisions may, in place of such standards, enact municipal health and safety standards to be operative during the housing emergency, consistent with ensuring minimal public health and safety. So you may take action such as is necessary to carry out the provision of this chapter. That's a lot of room. That's a lot of room to do a lot of things. The political subdivision may allow persons unable to obtain housing to occupy designated public facilities. That was a park, that was a building, that was a warehouse. That's how it defines it. So think about what power you have and do something more, do something better, because it is a crisis.
So if I could make a little bit of a comment there, I believe that's from some of the materials that have come from the state related to the HEAT program. We will absolutely post that on our website. We'll start a place where you can access any of these documents that you would like to see. We didn't bring them today. And that also, the city and the county will be bringing forward a resolution that's consistent with the language that you read.
Will we be meeting with homeless people?
Pardon me?
Will we be meeting with homeless people?
We're happy to. Absolutely. So, yes. So, are there any more comments that we should capture?
Yes, Erin Johansson from TLCS, and I just wanted to circle back to something that Dorothy said a minute ago, and in terms of the additional objectives. We have been talking for years about jail release between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m., and with all of the efforts and money that is being placed against the homeless population, can we not get the local jurisdictions, the county sheriff in particular, to the table with the county and others to talk about that practice? Because that would really help a lot if we could. And I know, I see the head shake, I know it's hard, but I feel like we have to talk about this right now. Because it really does create a lot of the problems we're talking about.
Okay.
No, Cameron Loves and Fishes. I know that the HEAT money really is addressing shelter expansion and expansion of services, but one of the reasons why we're in the situation that we're in as a community and as a state is that there is a massive housing crisis on top of the shelter crisis, on top of the homelessness crisis. And because we don't have enough housing to meet the needs of our population, we're in a very dire circumstance right now. And so I know that this money doesn't address that, but what are the concurrent efforts that are going to happen on behalf of the county and the city to help address the gap in housing that we need to address to help address this particular situation?
One of the things that's currently happening within the county, and we're working with all the cities, is encouraging through a streamlined process application for developers for permanent supportive housing under No Place Like Home, which is for persons experiencing homelessness with a serious mental illness. It's a program where the county will be committing for 20 years to services in this housing. We think, and we're working with SHRA, we're working with the cities to encourage as many applications as we can to this new funding source, which is dependent on the November ballot to authorize the source of funds. So that is one thing. We think positioning ourselves to, and we are looking at additional state bond financing, and to the extent this community can work collaboratively, and I know SHRA is here with the vouchers or with other operating subsidies, with capital, with all the jurisdictions and the services, we can access that money. So it's one thing. We just went to the board this week on that.
Hi, my name is Teresa Ogan. I'm the director of two multi-purpose senior services programs serving four local counties. One of the issues that we're seeing more and more consistently is seniors calling in, don't qualify for our services, they're homeless, they need a lot of assistance, there's complex medical and health issues going on, they lack adequate transportation and housing, and all of the other things. So I guess I'm kind of wondering about the funding that has a little bit more openness to it, if there's an ability to help address transportation and to help with folks who have disabilities or complex health issues, seniors, and thinking about, I think in this population that we're thinking of seniors at, you know, like 40, 45, and not traditionally what we think of seniors at. and maybe how we could use that funding in some creative ways to solve those complex issues.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, and one of the great things about having unrestricted funds is that we aren't limited by a lot of the programmatic things that come with other federal funding programs. And so, you know, those types of suggestions and making sure that we keep them open are great. I mean, I think we've always imagined that the subsidy side of this would be whatever it takes. You know, does one client need you to pay a back to a smudge bill, another client needs a pet deposit, you know, whatever, which some funding sources don't. And I think that's good, too, to think about on the case management side, allowing some flexibility for those. I know in the Pathways program, transportation is included. Not everybody's enrolled in Pathways or eligible for, but rolling some of those flexible subsidy dollars is really important. So that's, I think those kinds of comments, that's helpful to hear.
Hi, I just had a couple questions about your framing. There was a post up there that had a picture of a what we would mostly call a bed, and it bed shelter. And then we had a picture of a tent,
right,
which many of us advocates for the unhomed know that that is actually a shelter. And so I think that you need to add the concept of sanctioned versus unsanctioned shelter, because you are automatically excluding people who are sheltering themselves in response to an absence of systemic productivity with regards to this. I think also when you wrote down low or no barrier entry, that's incommensurate with the concept of quadrupling the triage, because the triage is not low barrier. Despite you calling it low barrier, it is not low barrier, because low barrier is not what you guys are looking for. I understand it looks great on paper, but it's not what's actually happening. And so I think that those things just right there sort of show you the more myopic scope that you've got, including the second question right here, are there subpopulations we should target? I hope to God you mean who gets shelter first and not who gets shelter and who does not get shelter. Because what I've seen across the country is that the way that city and county sanctioned programs work tend to leave 75% of people living outside. And what I've seen in the last couple of years of being more diligent than I was 20 years ago with this issue, is that we, being the taxpayers, are paying for and prioritizing the people who are chronically homeless and or the people who are the hardest to shelter, which are the ones who are the most expensive to shelter. Meanwhile, you're leaving outside thousands of people who have tried desperately to self-navigate themselves into shelter and have been denied. And this is coming from a place where, you know, you guys are all welcome. Come Tuesday morning, St. Paul, we served 35 homeless youth yesterday. Sacramento Steps Forward has refused to come and navigate them. I have paperwork to show it if you want me to further. So the only people that have been navigated is one person who was the most difficult to shelter, and he's back on the streets, and that's in 2 years. We meet every Tuesday. So I think that some of the ways in which you're framing your understanding, I just want you to own that a little bit more and not misinform the public, because this is not how the state of California is defining shelter. This is not how the state of California is defining an emergency. This is how you guys are defining it, and I just want a little bit more fluidity with that. Finally, I agree with what I think what Nikki was suggesting. There have been people who have been demanding this crisis for a long time and have been met not only on deaf ears, but also by police escorts out. Some of us in this room, me included. And so I find it a little disingenuous that all of a sudden, now that there's $17 million, everybody's scrambling to try to put together something very quickly that should have been all along. Sacramento Steps Forward was founded in 2011. It's accrued over $200 million in public money. And we haven't figured it out yet. I get that the funding for shelter is different, because I get that HUD doesn't fund that, and I get that there was, you know, reductions in directly funding shelters, but this, as what I think Bob was suggesting, this could be that correction, that we actually get people out of the elements, and if we don't have enough beds inside warehouses, then you allow sanctioned encampments. Seattle found that sanctioned encampments were twice as likely to put people into housing as was city encampments. City-funded shelter programs. So I think that there's also obviously some tension here between the anti-camping ordinance and what you guys are trying to propose, because I don't think we can have it both ways. And so I'm sure that that's what the legal committee is probably looking at. I'm glad that they are. But I really think that you need to
recognize and include people who are experiencing this in order for you to better understand who you're supposed to have been serving and who you plan to serve.
Thank you.
Yeah, just to underscore what Ms. Church just talking about is consideration of the subpopulations, getting that mentally into focus. SHRA prioritized homeless for certain projects that they've got. They put them to the top of the list, with the exception of veterans. Okay, now these are the high-rise for elderly, disabled, neither of which are any longer receiving any kind of priority. I live downtown in one of those high-rises. They did discuss this coming situation with the residents. We did voice some concerns, but the catastrophic nature of seeing some of the elderly homeless down there suffering in the Midtown area around Sutter's Fort, and seeing some of the younger homeless coming into the high rises ahead of those that, like Kimberly just said, you know, those that are trying to self-navigate and aren't going nowhere, they've given up, and they're desperate for help. A little more intuitive thought has to be put into it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any more comments? Any new ideas that we missed? Yeah, I thought we were kind of mixing it all up. Maybe we should move on to new ideas.
Yeah. I just have a question about what it's going to look like after this meeting. Will it be, where are we going to hear more about, where are the decisions happening, and how do we follow them? How do we have a voice in them? How do we hear what other people in this room think? I think my fear is that this will consolidate really quickly and head a few directions. And I think a lot of us are just now beginning to wrap our head around a lot of ideas and innovations. We're all just back here. I see everybody in our row whispering, oh God, if we could do this for money or that with the money. And I know we can send emails, but when we have to make decisions quickly, I echo what Nikki said, I'm afraid they'll get made quickly. And I also just want to, you know, Steps Forward is the home of the continuum of care, which is the providers and the clients they serve. And so to make sure that that money involves those voices and isn't just the advisory board or the staff of SAC Steps Forward.
So let me say a little bit about what we see, and as we said, this is really quick, but we are going to receive all these comments. We'll somehow compile them, make them available so that they're out there for you to come back and take a look at, so if you captured it correctly. Staff is getting, the partners are getting ready to work next week to start putting more flesh on the bones on some kind of a proposal that we think meets the requirements of the state application process. And it's a very broad proposal. It's gonna leave room for making this better later as we move forward. It's not gonna be set a really precise application. It will be presented to the continuum of care at their next meeting. And so there'll be another opportunity, and we will have a proposal for you to look at. And then we will receive that information. We hope that we get some kind of a recommendation from the continuum of care. That would be our plan. And we are tentatively scheduled to go to the City Council and the Board of Supervisors on the 25th of September. And the goal being getting the money as quickly as we can. And we do not really have very long to submit our application.
Can I just ask a quick follow-up?
When it goes to the continuum of care meeting, do you mean the advisory board, or
yes,
will that be open? What about those of us that aren't on the advisory board?
But those are open.
You're welcome. It's a public meeting. You're absolutely welcome to come and be heard.
Last time, Commoning was shut down for anybody that actually wasn't on the advisory board. So we just want to make sure at that meeting, there'd be an opportunity for broader voice.
Absolutely. Yes. And the proposal will be available ahead of time for you to see.
Anybody else?
we have an hour and a half meeting every month. This time, the recommendation of the review and rank panel is going to come forward and will have to be approved by the advisory board. Some of us are extremely unhappy with the recommendation that's coming forward and are going to bring issues. I don't think an hour and a half on that day is going to give a whole lot of time for community input on the issue we're talking about this afternoon. And the next, I'd be willing to stay later. I mean, if we could do more than an hour and a half. But I think we need to think about what we're doing.
That's a very well, that's a good point. We actually have two meetings coming up for the continuum of care. I'll let Michelle answer that.
I was just going to say the same thing. The review and rank.
And we apologize, we posted the wrong address on our PowerPoint. We will correct that before we send it out to you if you're interested in the PowerPoint. Our meetings, both of those meetings will be at SETA.
Just to follow up, it does seem like this topic deserves a meeting to itself, so I would encourage us to not have anything else on that agenda, or else in advance plan a longer meeting so that we will have an adequate time to really review and hear from our folks as well.
Thank you. We will make a point of looking at that and doing our best.
Hey, yeah, John from Portis and Cross Space Health. I think regardless of where we end up with people sheltered or housed or tented, there's still going to need a bigger infrastructure going down the road in terms of things like restrooms, showers. And those are, you know, that's, I think we need to accept that perfect is the enemy of the good. And in this case, we need to imagine where we're going to be 5 years from now. 5 years from now, we're going to have probably more people who are homeless. Our economy, however well it's going under the Obama economy right now, it's going to turn. And we're going to see more people homeless with excellent programs that we have. What we don't have is a good infrastructure for right now for people who are living on the streets. Even if they're a shelter, they're going to discharge the streets for the day. And this is a matter of human dignity that we can easily correct. And so I would like to see some of that work in, and maybe we can leverage other funds as we work on the convention center, the welcome committee for Sacramento. We can see this as a good thing for tourists as well. More conveniences for all these people. We will absolutely work on making it more shelter. The other thing, as the chair of the continuing care advisory board, I do want to acknowledge the work of staff here today. We may have a brief with SACSEP's board, but thank you very much for convening this meeting. Thank you very much for making sure it was as inclusive as it is. I'm seeing a lot of people talking together, working together, and developing a plan. But I haven't seen you work this closely in a long time. So I really would say I appreciate that very much. The president wants to start.
Any other comments? Here's one.
So could you say specifically who will make the decision about how to spend the money that's flowing to the continuum of care?
In our process, we're recommending the COC advisory body to make a recommendation on the proposal and to identify SAC Steps Forward as the applicant entity. We will then be taking our proposals to the City Council and the Board of Supervisors for their approval as well.
Given that a shelter crisis is a requirement, and given that we're looking at partnering in how we administer it, it really is a tri-party approval between the council, the board, and the COC advisory. And that complicates things. That's what collaboration does. It is sort of not entirely clear. We also need to know fairly
quickly if you know what the roles are in terms of administration. We may not have been explicit in saying that we want to use the existing administrative infrastructure of the flexible housing pool that the county currently administers for that administering rental assistance in that contract. If we're doing something different that's not that, then you know the role of the county would be different. Similarly with the city, that I think Emily wants to add.
And just I think it's obvious, but in case it's not, the $5.6 million that's coming directly to the city, obviously the decisions on the funding parameters, partners, we made at the city council, and that will include the designation of locations, whether they're public or private, whether they're indoor or outdoor, the shelter types of spaces that we choose to open. All of those decisions for the $5.6 million will be at the city council.
Do both have to declare?
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Shelter crisis?
If we're going to administer funds,
if we're going to draw down all these funds and administer all of them, then yes.
More comments? Well, with that, we'll stay for a while if people have more specific questions. We're certainly willing to receive your comments electronically or in any other manner. We will get information out to you about what the PowerPoint from today, the comments from today. We'll be posting things on the Sacramento Steps Forward website, and we welcome you to the Day of Care meeting.
If you do have written comments and you want to drop them off, please give them and I'll to Myra in the back, and my email is at the bottom, and that's where you can email comments. And there's one more comment from me.
Sacramento Public Library, and I'm sorry I came in late, but I'm just sitting here because I'm a problem solver by nature, because I run an underfunded agency like many of you. It's not a lot of money for such a big problem. What's one thing we could do that would make a difference, or two things? Have we talked about that? And again, I'm sorry, maybe it's a blindly stupid question because I was late, but it just seems to me if we could say, we'll do these two things with it, then maybe the rest of it will happen. You know, I keep hearing Salt Lake has all the answers. Is that true? you know, that's all I wanted to say. What's one thing we can do to solve this? We have a navigator, we love him. He does everything wonderful, but as Kim says, he's got nothing to navigate to. So we need the two. What does that look like?
Yeah, so Rick, I think you did maybe miss some of the, we now, admittedly, there's not a lot of detail. And I'll catch you up later, but yes, we are trying to solve the problem you identified that there's nowhere to navigate to, and trying to solve for the problem, not the entirety of the problem Bob identified, there's not enough shelter. So the two basic components are adding additional shelter and adding rehousing, both funds for the housing and supportive services so that there's a place to navigate to, so there's a place to land to. It's not going to solve everything, but I'm very hopeful about it and excited about the opportunity and really appreciate all the input. And I'll give you more detail if you want.
I just want to add one other thing we're excited about is building on what's working in this community, which detracts from the simplicity of it, because we are trying to build on what's working, recognizing things are not perfect, but we have a system of youth providers. How do we tap into what's working and what's needed? Additional conversations needed in specific areas, we want to have that. But you know, we have a system of navigation, but it's not threaded together and there's no rehousing. How do we build on that? And we have shelters who aren't rehousing people because they don't have a resource. That increases capacity. So it does complicate things. I do appreciate you wanting to simplify it, and everyone that knows me knows I want to complicate it. No. But we have a lot we want to now string together in a little bit more coherent way that does deliver rehousing and shelter, as
I might
say.
My name is Frank Coffin. Having been homeless myself formerly, and secretary of the Sacramento County Mental Health Board for 6 years, and on the Mental Health Services Steering Committee for 10 years now. I tried to get the idea home to both the city council and the board of supervisors for over 6 years that they need to declare a shelter crisis. It's critical. And now the state has mandated you shall do it or you ain't going to be eligible for this $12 million or I hear maybe $17 million. September 25th, after the meeting that will be on the calendar, and I hope we get an email about that, the time, they will have a public comment period at the county. That is after the particular agenda item. The city is different. They have moved their public comment period to ahead of the agenda item, okay, for city council time. So at 5 p.m. you have to be there. I intend on being there for both of them. I very warmly encourage all of you or any of you to go ahead and see if you can come down and be there for each. Thank you.
Can I just clarify one thing? Frank is correct for public comment at the city council for items not on the agenda. It is at 5 o'clock. So this will be an agendized item. So you don't have to be there right at 5, although I do expect there'll be a full house. You're welcome to comment at both parts, but if you want to comment on the item, you would comment at the item, not at 5 p.m.
So looking around the room, I don't see hands right now, so maybe we can adjourn, but also, as I said before, we will be here to answer more particular questions if you have them, and we're committed to get information out to you on this meeting and the upcoming meetings, and we'll do our best to make the next COC meeting agenda very light so that we can have the September 12th COC meeting light so we can continue to have a good conversation about this proposal. So thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.